Talking today with Roy Lee Lindsay, of course, from the Oklahoma Poor Council. Roy Lee, let's talk about several things. Right now, this is summer season, active time to be promoting pork. And as we hit the second holiday of the season, Memorial Day, 4th of July, Labor Day, these are always holidays that the meat industry, red meat industry, really looks forward to because grilling season means a lot of consumption.
Yeah, it does. And I think, you know, as folks are making their plans for 4th of July this weekend and going to the lake, you go to the lake, you cook out when you're at the lake, you have a picnic with your family, you go to the park, watch the fireworks, whatever it may be. Folks are going to be putting meat on the grill. That's what we do, especially here in Oklahoma. And we think pork fits very nicely into that plan, whether you're talking about grilling pork chops, whether you want to smoke some ribs for the weekend. You know, you can grill pork ribs, too. You don't have to smoke them. A lot of people think, well, if I'm going to buy ribs, I've got to go smoke them. You can get recipes online everywhere for just how to grill some pork ribs and do them in a much quicker time frame than putting them on the smoker and leaving. And it gives you a different flavor because instead of cooking them low and slow, you've cooked them a little faster, and you get some crust on the outside. And I mean, it's a different taste and a different texture, but it's something you could do that's different. The other thing that I think really folks should try this weekend for something different is make your own pork burgers. You can buy ground pork at the store today. Almost all the grocery stores carry it. And make your own pork patties and grill those in place of your traditional hamburger. Just for a little variety, I think you'll find folks just absolutely rave about the flavor and the texture and, wow, what did you do different here? And if that's too much of a stretch for you, don't forget to add some bacon to the hamburgers you were planning to cook.
Very good. Let's talk a little bit about some of the other things going on right now as folks enjoy those pork burgers and everything else. About a month ago, you were at the World Pork Expo. Big industry event, of course, always. I know there was a lot of focus on you know, where we are right now in the industry and kind of grappling with where we're headed in trying to push back on PEDV.
Yeah, PEDV continues to, I'll say, confound us a little bit. We are seeing some slowdown, we think, in terms of new cases. The veterinarians all thought that was going to happen this summer due to summer heat. This type of coronavirus tends not to like heat, and so generally they don't spread very well over the summer, and it looks like that's the case. What we don't know is what's going to happen this fall, this winter, when it starts to get cold again. Are we going to see a series of rebreaks, farms that have already been through it once? Where do we go? Ordinarily, you would think that maybe you'd get some immunity to virus. You've been exposed once. You'd have some immunity, and maybe that would last a year or 2 years down the road. Some of the preliminary stuff we're seeing says this may only last 3 or 4 months, which is essentially the next litter. And so if that's the case, do you have good immunity through the next litter only? Will it even make it through the next litter? Or are we going to see the same kind of challenges if you get exposed again? Now, what you typically see on a farm, if you get your farm cleaned up and you do your biosecurity and your sanitation things well, your farm goes back negative relatively quickly. Well, if you get exposed again and you've got a bunch of naive animals, then you've got to go through this process all over again. And realistically, one of the things that I think everybody gets a little frustrated, why haven't we solved this problem yet? I think it's important to remember we didn't have this disease in the United States 15 months ago. I mean, we discovered it really in May of 2013, so we're just barely, you know, 14, 15 months into even knowing we had the disease here and what can we do about it. Pork industry, Pork Checkoff in particular, has put about $3 million into research, everything from prevention, how do we limit spread, how do we treat animals that have got it, how did it get here, what do we do going forward to prevent rebreaks, all of those kinds of things that will help us long term. Mm-hmm. And in addition, earmarked some money to help us start thinking about what the next, I think they're calling this a transboundary disease, but a disease that exists somewhere else in the world that we don't have here. What's the next one that might pop up here, and what do we need to do to be prepared for it? Because, you know, part of being a proactive type organization is not reacting faster. It's actually trying to get out ahead of what's there. And so I know they're in the process of doing some investigation on what are the diseases that are endemic in other parts of the world. What's the likelihood they would come here? What would we need to be prepared for if they did come here? And I think all of that shows great foresight and is really important long term You know, PED is a pretty good wake-up call for us in the pork industry. We've always talked about foot and mouth being that grand event that nobody wants to deal with, and what's the end of the day? Well, PED spread real fast. It did a lot of the things that we had anticipated foot and mouth might do, and it gave us kind of a wake-up call for how good is our biosecurity. I talked to a producer this week who talked about simple things within our farms. You know, we'll have multiple rooms where we've got sows farrowing. And we never really have thought much about the difference of, well, we got sows farrowing in all these rooms. We'll just go back and forth between rooms. PED has made us rethink that notion that from a biosecurity standpoint, let's start in the room with the youngest pigs, those that were just born today or just being born, and do everything we need to with this group of animals before we move to the next group, and let's not go backwards. So let's not expose, I mean, even within a farm, let's not expose different rooms to different pathogens, if you will. That's kind of a new and a novel approach to what we're learning, what we're seeing, and how we can get better. We talk all the time about the need for continuous improvement on our farms. It's a great way for us to, we've learned an awful lot, and we're getting a lot better. We don't know everything we need to, but we know a lot more, and we're getting better every day at how do we deal with this.
I guess what, losing 8 million pigs in a year, that's the wake-up call.
Yeah, as an industry, you know, we've been fortunate, I think, that it's not been an economic disaster for everyone. It is the toll here is primarily, if you're a large-scale commercial producer, you've probably made out okay because of PED, because your hogs that you've got left have been worth so much more money. But on farms where you've experienced a break, the emotional toll is tremendous. You go from all of the folks that work on that farm with one goal in mind, to put healthy pigs on the truck once a week, to ship them on up the chain so they can become somebody's 4th of July pork chop, to taking care of pigs that are dying or taking care of dead pigs. And the emotional shift, I mean, everything is always geared toward healthy pigs. Let's move them through the chain, to dealing with we don't have any healthy pigs to move. And if you go 3 weeks without weaning a single pig, that's a tremendous toll emotionally on your employees. And I think sometimes that gets lost out there.
And of course, in the case of Oklahoma, we've become more and more of a sow state, as far as we farrow the pigs, we wean them, and we ship them elsewhere to be fed out.
Yeah, we do. We are still ranked 5th nationally in terms of total sow herd. I don't see that changing anytime soon. Overall, though, our overall hog and pig inventory continues to decline. Now, some of that is PED related. Obviously, we've lost, I'm going to guess, 450,000 baby pigs here in Oklahoma over the last 14 months to PED. But we're also seeing some change in industry structure here. Folks that have finished sites where we'd raise hogs to market weight are converting those into sow farms just for what you said, for the ability to ship weaned pigs from here up into the Midwest where they're closer to corn. And it makes sense when you think about it from an economic standpoint. A truckload of corn would carry enough corn to feed about 100 pigs to market weight. At the same time, I can put about 2,500 baby pigs on that truck and ship them to corn. So what makes more sense from an economic standpoint? We had a long discussion about this the other day about the dynamics of the industry 15 years ago when we were building, 18 years ago when we were building in Oklahoma, this concept of sows and going to finish hogs here. Well, there weren't many processing plants here, but, you know, diesel fuel wasn't $4 a gallon. And so you could afford to put animals on a truck and ship them somewhere when you were paying $1 a gallon for diesel. $4 a gallon for diesel changes that dynamic tremendously. And so it makes more sense today to ship pigs to corn than it does to bring corn here and to ship market hogs back into the Midwest. And so I think that's a shift that we're going to continue to see here locally. You'll see our sow numbers have crept up. We're up about 5% over where we were a year ago. I think that's going to continue to be kind of the trend. And that's not adding more animals to Oklahoma. That's taking out existing finished sites, existing nurseries, and converting them into sows. So overall, I think our overall herd inventory in Oklahoma is going to continue to decline downward gradually, and the sow number is going to continue to go up gradually.
Overall, give us kind of a summation of where you see the Oklahoma industry right now. What's the state of the union, I guess, on our Oklahoma pork industry?
Well, if we set PED aside for a minute, and which is hard to do, but productivity in Oklahoma for our sow producers prior to PED was on a tremendous upswing. We were really getting ahead of a lot of the challenges that we've had. Our pigs per sow per year was up. Our pigs per litter was up. If you go back and look just at the USDA report that we just got, and you know, we were in that 10.1, 10.2 pigs per litter that were farrowed before we had PED break. We're now back down to about 9.5, and that loss is 100% attributable to PED. So we've got modern facilities here. We've got specialized production in terms of sow farms and the people on those farms. We're going to continue, I think, when we figure out how to get a handle on PED, we're going to see a tremendous growth in our pig production, the number of pigs we produce. And so in that regard, you know, protein's the meat of choice around the world. I mean, protein. Pork is the meat protein of choice around the world. It's going to remain that way as Asia and India and other countries around the world get more money and their people get more affluent. The first thing they do is improve their diet by adding meat, and pork is that meat that they want. And so U.S. is still lowest cost, safest food provider for pork around the world. There's only one entity in the world that's producing pork at a lower cost than we are today, and that's in Brazil, and they don't yet have the infrastructure to capture all the export market, to ship it out, to et cetera. We're the country that's still positioned to do that. We're significantly cheaper than the European Union. We're cheaper than most everywhere else in the world, cheaper than China. You know, China continues to grow and to just be this behemoth, if you will, out there in terms of potential. The opportunities there are tremendous. We look at, you know, negotiating the Trans-Pacific Partnership and that free trade agreement. If we can get Japan to agree that we're going to move our tariffs and our barriers to zero, when we can get that done and move that forward, Japan's already our best market for value. So if we can eliminate those barriers, the potential there is tremendous as well. So long term, I think the future from a pork production standpoint, from a consumption standpoint, looks very good. Still some challenges, whether you're talking about PED, whether we're talking about regulatory challenges. There are still challenges out there, but I think long term, the demand for pork is going to be very good. You know, I have great empathy for our friends in the cattle business. You know, having raised cattle when I was much younger and our family having a herd, I know what it is when you're selling off cows because you don't have any grass and so forth. But the simple fact is that that's where beef's at today. And if they tried to change it tomorrow, they're still 2 years, 3 years before they can really have an impact on available supply. And so that's not going to change anytime soon. And so we have an opportunity to continue to benefit, if you will, by pork being a substitute for beef and around the world, both here and abroad.